Welcome, everybody. Today we have the pleasure to interview Dr. Jurjen Verwijs from the Erasmus Cancer Institute, University Medical Center of Rotterdam, the Netherlands, and the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, the Harvard Medical School of Boston, USA, to talk about the recent paper published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology entitled Allogeneic Hematopoietic Cell Transplantation Improves Outcomes in MDS Across High-Risk Genetic Subgroups, Genetic Analysis of the Blood and Marrow Transplant Clinical Trials Network 1102 Study. First of all, I apologize if I mispronounce your first and last name, which I will allow you to reproduce in the correct way first. And I want to thank on behalf of the EBMT to have accepted this invitation.
Yes, thank you for this invitation. And you did a very nice job. My name is Jurjen Verwijs, and it's a typical Dutch name. I'm sorry for that.
No, I'm sorry, because it's difficult for me to pronounce it. Okay. Let's go to the nitty-gritty of your paper and try to understand, first of all, why do we have to transplant a patient with MDS, and why did you choose to focus your research on the higher risk setting?
Yeah. So allogeneic transplant is the only curative treatment for patients with myelodysplastic syndrome, MDS. But given the risk of treatment-related mortality, allogeneic transplant is generally only offered to those patients with a higher disease risk or with a high risk of MDS-related complications, such as infections or a high transfusion burden. So that's typically why we should transplant or consider transplant for an MDS patient. And when this study was designed in the United States, early transplantation for older patients with MDS was not broadly accepted and reimbursed. So therefore, the BMT-CTN 1102 study was designed as a biological assignment trial, which included patients between the age of 50 and 75 years with an IPSS intermediate 2 or high risk de novo MDS. And these patients obviously needed to be eligible for allogeneic transplant. And that study actually enrolled patients already quite a while ago, between 2014 and 2018. The treatment arm assignment was based on donor availability, which meant that you had either a well-matched related or unrelated donor within a 90-day search window. And that study was been published by Ryo Nakamura in JCO as a first author 2 years ago, and showed that overall survival was clearly improved and prolonged in patients who had a donor with a 3-year survival of close to 50% compared with 27% in patients who had no donor available. So yeah, that study really confirmed what some countries already knew and did, that a transplant for higher risk MDS patients is really beneficial and prolongs outcome.
So, and thank you also for this more broad sort of background, and for giving us also the opportunity to know that there are some difference between, for instance, our European approach and the US-based approach, which of course has to deal with the insurance-based sort of issues. Can you give us some information on the study design? So you leveraged the biorepository for the study you previously mentioned, right? What did you do with those samples?
Yeah. So the primary paper did not include genetic analysis. So for this analysis, we were able to obtain for 309 patients their genetic samples from enrollment, from the time of enrollment in the study. There were in total 384 patients included in the study, so there were no samples available for roughly one-fifth of the patients. And we did the next generation sequencing for those 309 patients from this study and compared outcomes between the genetic subgroups we were able to identify in this analysis.
And which type of genetic lesions did you identify? Since we are talking about high risk setting, did you? I think you found some TP53 mutations, right?
Yes, you read the paper, so it's obvious that TP53 in this high risk population, and mind you, this is IPSS intermediate 2 and high risk disease, and we indeed found TP53 being mutated in 1/3 of the patients, and that. We were actually quite surprised because it's a relatively high percentage, and we also compared this to the study published by Coleman Lindsley in the New England Journal a couple of years ago. And actually, if we subsetted those patients included in that analysis to the inclusion criteria of this study, we found that actually those percentages were very close proximity of each other, and also 1/3 of patients being having a TP53 mutation. And the most frequent other type of mutations were the splice factor mutations, which I guess you would also expect in these higher risk MDS population.
Right. And which characteristics and disease feature did you find to be impactful for post-transplant outcomes?
Yeah, so I think one of the stories that has been published and discussed in the last years, especially when talking about TP53 mutations, is the allelic state of the TP53 mutation, which means that patients are considered as a multi-hit TP53 mutated disease when two mutations are present or when there is loss of heterozygosity combined with a single TP53 mutation, or when there's a deletion of chromosome 17 or 17p by karyotype analysis in combination with a TP53. So really both alleles being compromised by P53 or P53 related alterations. But in this higher risk cohort, we actually observed that outcomes weren't that different between TP53 single and TP53 multi-hit, which I think is really underlining the already higher risk of the disease. In multivariable analysis, there was a slightly higher risk of death for the multi-hit patients compared to the single-hit patients, but not as clear as an impact of the allelic state compared to the previous studies published. And before you ask, the other important and mutations that were associated with outcome were, I guess, also the usual suspects. DDX41 mutations were associated with favorable outcomes, which is already published by previous authors. And also KMT2A, PTD, partial tendon duplications were associated with worse outcomes, although both of them were relatively infrequent. But I think we, in the end, might speak a little bit to DDX41, but the main story in this paper, except that across all genetic subgroups, we were able to confirm the impact of transplant compared to no transplant as being positive. So transplanting these high-risk diseases, high-risk MDS, across all the genetic subgroups was not different than what was already observed.
So you were able basically to recapitulate what was already found in the JCO paper of 2 years ago, giving it a little bit of like more genetic flavors and improving, let's say, by adding also the high risk setting, in particular dealing with the TP53 and the other high risk mutations. And that's like very important, because we do know that sometimes, and this has been discussed in like many congresses and conferences, a transplant physician might not even like want to candidate this patient, right? So that your work is super important. So really, thank you.
If I may add, so especially for the TP53 mutated patients, because I think for other types of genetic alterations in MDS, we are sort of okay and transplant those patients. But especially TP53 is a subgroup which are hinting at that physicians think, well, maybe we shouldn't treat them at all, or try to enroll them in clinical trials, but not offer them transplant upfront. And I think in this analysis, and I think that's one of the key findings here, that irrespective of the clinical genetic variables, including allelic state, that outcome was improved after allogeneic transplant compared with the no transplant approaches. And I think that's, this is actually one of the first true comparisons of a no transplant versus a transplant group in the TP53 MDS context. And I think that's, like you're saying, an important important finding.
Yeah, it's what we needed actually as an evidence to candidate this patient for transplant if available a donor. So I have another question, and now we shift to the pre-transplant time. Did you find any pre-transplant treatment to impact on long-term post-transplant survival outcome?
So that's actually a great question. So this is the upfront transplant setting. So per protocol, the idea was to transplant these patients when a donor was available and the transplant was scheduled. So the median time from enrollment in the study to transplant was about 4 months.
Okay.
But it was allowed for the physicians to give some treatment in between, like azacitidine. Mm-hmm. And especially for the TP53 subgroup, you might say that actually the long-term survivors were the ones that had some treatment in between the enrollment and the actual transplant, resulting in their favorable outcomes. And that's actually something we also looked at. So we, with the help of Chris Hurrigan's lab, very deeply sequenced samples very close to the transplant. Those were available in about 2/3 of the transplanted patients. And we actually found that only 2 patients had no P53 mutations, and all the others, all the P53 mutations remained. And some of them had actually reduced TP53 variant allele frequency, but there was no impact with any threshold of variant allele frequency. So the treatment in between enrollment in this trial and the actual transplantation did not impact outcome. And it's something we as physicians need to consider for the individual patient. But broadly speaking, I don't think that will cure your patient or help your patients going in a better state towards the transplant. I think key is still to transplant these patients.
Okay, so when we say transplant, we can also say, also given what you've just said, that this is true also for the decreasing of TP53 variant allele frequency, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just
but that didn't impact. So decreasing the tumor burden, the variant allele frequency, however you would like to phrase it.
Yeah.
That didn't impact outcome.
Nor the association of the treatment as a disease modifying sort of like agent. Okay.
Exactly. I don't think that's needed for the long-term outcomes for these
patients. That's actually also like another important finding, right? Because we always try to follow and track these clones in sort of like AML kind of fashion, if you allow me to phrase it this way, you know, like a sort of an MRD, but of course, like perhaps this might not be the case, right? Especially in this setting, or at least not in this cohort. Let's put it this way.
Exactly. I would be a bit more conservative because I don't think we have the numbers to firmly say that MRD in TP53 is not something we can use. That's definitely potentially still something that could be relevant. But I think what this analysis showed is that clearing the mutation did not impact or reducing the variant allele frequency did not impact the outcomes.
Okay. And finally, I noticed you applied a new IPSSM score, right? So what did you observe while applying this new implemented molecular tool in the setting you studied?
Yes, so as hematologists, we always like to group patients, and I think the molecular IPSS is very helpful in that.
I will say not as hematologist, but as son of Aristotle's. It's his fault if you want to categorize everything, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but we always try to harmonize a bit so we can dictate our treatment strategies. And so we wondered whether that also applied here in this cohort. So the IPSS is a six-tiered MDS risk classification, recently published, as you know, and uses somatic mutations in 31 genes. But these the IPSS-M is based on unselected cohorts spanning from IPSS low to the high-risk disease groups, and only a minority, less than 10%, received an actual transplant. So we were really looking whether this model also was predictive in the in this cohort. And we identified, not surprisingly, that also in this cohort, most patients were classified as high or very high risk. And indeed, with higher scores, patients had worse outcomes, especially the ones with the high and the very high risks. But we observed something interesting, actually, in the IPSS-M very high risk subgroup, which consisted of basically two populations, the TP53 mutated patients with MDS. We already talked about that, but also another population with the TP53 wild type disease, who most commonly had, for instance, ASXL1, RUNX1, and SRSF2 mutations, and also relatively high blast counts. And we observed in that specific population, IPSS-M very high risk, non-TP53 mutated disease, that also those patients had a significantly improved outcome, overall survival, when they received transplant with an allogeneic donor compared to those without a donor. So also in the very high risk subgroups, it appeared that transplant was really beneficial and provide long-term survival.
Okay, so to summarize, we already touched, I think, the key messages and most relevant findings of your study. But can you give us some bullet point as take home messages, and then answer the question we always want to hear: should we transplant patients with MDS even with biallelic TP53 mutations?
Yes. So I think the key point here is that in the high risk MDS population, any patient still benefits from transplant, and especially patients with a TP53 mutation, irrespective of the genetic variables, including the allelic state, but also the pre-transplant mutation clearance, patients had a superior survival with allogeneic transplant after reduced intensity conditioning compared with the non-transplant approaches. And this was also found in the patient subgroup with a biallelic mutation. So based on these data, those patients indeed had a higher risk of death, but still saw long-term survival with transplant. So on the basis of these data, I would not reserve or not transplant a patient with a biallelic TP53 mutated disease on the basis of the genetics alone. It's always important to have a conversation with your patient, because we are still, I'm very positive about these results, but we're still looking at a 3-year survival of 25% in this population. Sure. So still need to acknowledge that we need to do better and tell this to our patients and in a shared decision making. I think that's especially important for these patients.
And you touched a very nice point. I always, whenever somebody asks me, and we are in a thorny situation because there's not so much evidence. So of course, we have somehow our hands tight, and you have to give some data, but you're yourself are not 100% convinced about your decision, or somehow wants to share it with your patient. I think what you're saying is very much important, because we have always to have like a compliance with our patients. So the best decision is the one that is shared in between us and our patient, right?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Absolutely. Nicely said.
So, Julian, I'm very much grateful for having you in the Training Pearls today, and I am looking forward for the long-term survival of this trial.
We'll see about that.
Hopefully, we're going to interview you in some years, okay?
Would be great. Looking forward.
So have a nice rest of your day, and thank you.
Thank you.